All right, let's go ahead and get started. So, as we always do, we put up this disclosure that says that we do not give advice or promote or endorse any particular investment. We are custodian and record keeper of retirement accounts, what are called self-directed retirement accounts. So you make all your own investment decisions with us. You have to choose your investment, do your own due diligence. So we encourage everybody to discuss any investments you want to make with advisors, attorneys, CPAs, et cetera, but you won't be getting that kind of advice from Entrust. So what are we going to do? We're going to go over the top seven mistakes that we see IRA holders make and how to avoid them, some positive management habits, and then at the end, as I mentioned, we're going to do a Q&A. That's me. I've been with Entrust for a little over almost 15 years at this point. And my role is to, I'm business development manager, is to provide education on how self-directed IRAs work. We are self-directed, as I mentioned. We have on there self-directed IRA administrators. We have the Entrust Trust Company as the custodian of the IRA, and then the Entrust Group acts as the record keeper slash administrator. A large part of our company are certified IRA service professionals. That's what the CISP says. And we do these monthly educational only webinars. A lot of times we bring on subject matter experts to present, but this time it's just going to be me. We've been in business since 1981, so over 40 years in business. We currently have about $5 billion in holdings. We have somewhere between 24 and 25,000 investors. And with Entrust, you get a single point of contact. So if you have an account with us, I'm one of four business development managers. We each have an associate. So you get a team of two people, depending upon who may have referred you or what region you're in. You are assigned that team as your point of contact. All right, let's get to it. Top seven mistakes for IRAs. I'm going to just go ahead and read this. Part of learning how to manage your IRAs, understand the most common errors that account holders make so you can avoid them. We'll highlight some of the classic ones, still getting investors in trouble before some lesser-known benefits that often go overlooked. Not only important lessons to understand, but a great foundation for all to maximize your IRA strategy. As it says, don't risk cracking your nest egg by mistake. Spend some time now to save money later. So for the almost 100 of you that are on here, that's what you're doing. Whoops, let me go back one. So number one, not creating a strategic plan for managing beneficiary updates. So the way retirement accounts work for IRAs, 401ks, et cetera, you have a custodian and you have a beneficiary. The account holder is the beneficiary. And then in a case with the account with us, we are the custodian. You also need to name a beneficiary in the event of your death. Right. So an IRA has one person who is the account holder, who is the beneficiary, and then you name people or a trust or something as the beneficiary of your death. So, as it says, there are many circumstances, potential outcomes to account for when creating a good beneficiary strategy. Without a good contingency plan, you risk some or all assets and cash not having a clear place to be sent and then being incorrectly distributed to or claimed by the state. Okay. So, we have, when you open an account with us, we ask you to name both primary and contingency beneficiaries. So, you have the ability to open an account with us without naming a primary or a contingent beneficiary, without naming a beneficiary at all. But then, if you pass, then your account is going to go to probate. And it's, you know, there's legal things associated with that. So make sure that you keep your beneficiary information updated. So for example, if you were to get divorced or something were to happen or something like that, and you haven't changed your beneficiary in the event of your death, it's going to go to whoever you named as the beneficiary. Also make sure your beneficiary is aware of the scenarios. So as it says, if you don't prepare your beneficiaries for tax rules on future inherited accounts, they may not be ready to manage the new IRA. So, if your beneficiary is a spouse, they can roll their IRA into their own name, right? So, for spouses, they can take the account and move it into their own account. And then it's now not subject to the rules for beneficiary accounts. So, it can either be for a spouse, it can either be a beneficiary account, or they can move it into their own account. For everybody else, it has to go into what's called a beneficiary IRA. And for, as it says, designated beneficiaries have to liquidate the entire account within 10 years, while all other beneficiaries must liquidate in 5 years. So that was a rule that was put into place under the previous administration. So you want to make sure that your beneficiaries are aware of these rules, and particularly if it's a spouse, the fact that they can take it into their own account. Creating an informed plan. So create a plan to assign beneficiaries, educate them, and remember to review your beneficiary tree either annually. If you get married, you could add your spouse. If you have any children during the time you have an account, you can add them as a contingent. Again, if someone dies, update your beneficiaries accordingly. You get divorced, removing them. And then when you retire, if you're consolidating accounts, make sure that you're reviewing this information. All right, so number two, mistakenly engaging with disqualified persons or prohibited transactions. That's a big one. Probably should be number one, actually. So there are a list of people that your IRA is not allowed to essentially do business with. They're called disqualified persons that could create prohibited transactions. So you as the account holder and your spouse, your ancestors, so parents, grandparents, great-grandparents, et cetera, your lineal descendants, so children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, et cetera, and then also fiduciaries and plan service providers are also considered disqualified persons, but there seems to be less issue associated with that than there is with the familial ones. Again, you and your spouse, your ancestors, your lineal descendants. So not all family members are disqualified persons. Your siblings, your cousins, nieces, nephews, aunts, uncles are not considered disqualified persons. So what are the rules? So there's a section of the code, section 4975 of the Internal Revenue Code that talks about this. But essentially, your IRA is not allowed to engage in what's called a prohibited transaction with a disqualified person. We're going to give you some examples of those. If you do commit a prohibited transaction inside your IRA, then your IRA would be considered a no longer tax sheltered entity at the time in the year that the prohibited transaction occurred, and it could create a taxable event for you that could go back years depending upon when the prohibited transaction occurred. So, an example, you're 50 years old, you have a traditional IRA with a balance of $500,000. You decide to use the funds to purchase a rental property and then rent the property to your daughter. That's a prohibited transaction because your daughter is a disqualified person to your IRA, right? She's on the list of those people that are considered disqualified persons. So, if you buy rental property inside your IRA and you rent it out, that's great. You're allowed to do that. You just can't rent it to a disqualified person. If you were to do that and the IRS were to determine that you committed a prohibited transaction, then your IRA would become disqualified in the year in which the prohibited transaction occurred, right? So for a $500,000, it would become a distribution to you in the year that that occurred. And now you're subject to taxes and, depending upon how old you are, potentially a penalty on top of that. Okay. So it says on here, for most taxpayers, this would lead to a single year federal tax bill of over $160,000 based on the current tax rates. The way the wording is, as far as what is a prohibited transaction, it's any improper use of an IRA or plan by the plan participant or a disqualified person is not permitted by the IRS. All right. I know that there's some vagueness to that, some ambiguity associated with what exactly is committed as a prohibited transaction. When it comes to real estate, it can be pretty black and white. A disqualified person can't stay in a property owned by the IRA and also can't do any physical labor, any sweat equity on the property. So, some examples. Your IRA is allowed to borrow money, but it can't borrow money from a disqualified person. You can't sell a property in an IRA to a disqualified person. So, for example, you can't buy a property from your own IRA or sell a property in your IRA to your children. You're not allowed to use your IRA or your plan as security for you to personally go borrow money. Again, the IRA itself can borrow money, but you can't go to a bank and put up, let's say, a property that's owned by your IRA as collateral for you to get your own loan. Again, the IRA itself can borrow money. The IRA that owns property can use as collateral for the IRA to borrow money. But you can't use any assets or your plan itself, your IRA itself, to go to a bank and use it as collateral for you personally to borrow money. Again, buying property for personal use. If your IRA buys a property, it has to be for investment purposes only. And then investing in a privately held company that's owned by a disqualified person. So if you have kids who are starting up a company and you want to use your IRA to invest in that company, you're probably not going to be able to do it. There is some ruling in the way the code is written in terms of it depends upon the role that the disqualified person has in the company and how much ownership they have in the company. So it's not a matter of if your kid works for a company and has 2% ownership, you might be able to, or probably would be able to use your IRA to invest in that company. But if it's wholly owned by your kid, then you can't use your IRA to invest in it. There also, if you have your own retirement account and you have your own company and you'd like to use your own retirement account to invest back into your own company, there is a program called Rollover for Business Startup, ROBS, that does allow you to use your retirement account funds to invest back into your own company. But there's a couple rules that's very specific that you have to meet to qualify for the ROBS scenario. One, the business has to be a C corp. It can't be an S corp, an LLC, a limited partnership, anything else. And two, the account itself, the plan itself has to be a 401k plan. It can't be an IRA. So there's no scenario where you can use your IRA to invest back into your own company if you have a specific amount of ownership in the company and depending upon the role you have in that company, right? If you want to operate under the ROBS, it would have to be a 401k plan and the company would have to be a C corp. All right, number three, not understanding and planning for future costs and potential additional funding needs. This is often going to come into case with real estate, but it could be with a private equity if they're doing capital calls. So the IRA, your IRA has very strict funding rules. Depending upon the type of retirement account that you have, whether it's traditional IRA, Roth IRA, the maximum contribution, I think, is 7,000, 7,500. Not sure what it is these days. That's the maximum you can contribute in a year. A 401k plan or a SEP IRA, there's maximum contributions you can make in a year depending upon your income. So if you have maximized your retirement account to make the investment you want to make, and then you need more money to either meet a capital call, or if you're owning real estate and you have some unexpected expense like a roof repair or something like that, and you don't have the cash inside your IRA to cover that, there's only certain things you can do to get more money inside the retirement account. You can't just simply pay it out of pocket, and you just can't put any money that you want into your retirement account. You can transfer or roll over more money if you have another retirement account with a different custodian. Let's say you have an account with Entrust, you only have some of your money there, you're invested in a property, you need to add more money, you can transfer or roll more money over. But let's say you don't have another account, and the amount that you're able to contribute based on your earned income and the type of account that you have doesn't meet the amount that you need in order to pay whatever expense you have. You need to plan for that. The other option is, again, the IRA can borrow money. It can borrow money from a disqualified person, but it can't just borrow from anybody that you want. So you want to, when you're, before you make any investment inside your IRA, you want to think about that and have a plan in place for all of that. So, you must understand all available funding options. Again, you can transfer, roll over more money. You can make annual contributions. Your IRA can borrow money. Have a plan in place. Never risk being in a position of needing to engage in a prohibited transaction or early withdrawal to fulfill funding needs. Some prohibited transactions cause your IRA to be deemed ineligible, and most early withdrawals have 10% penalty. So, from a standpoint of with a self-directed IRA, you're oftentimes also holding like assets that aren't tremendously liquid. And so if you do have like a personal expense and you might need to access the money that's inside your retirement account, bear in mind with a self-directed IRA, it might not be so easy to liquidate whatever holding that you have. Right? So an example, you purchase a multifamily home. apartment building or condo using your IRA, you end up investing 90% of your funds to close the deal. However, now you only have 10% to handle all the unexpected costs or damages that may occur. Since the IRA owns the asset, all these costs must be paid through the IRA. So make sure you have a good funding strategy to avoid cash flow industry issues if you run into something where it says the water heater breaks. So one example is people partner their IRA with other investors. So where your IRA doesn't bear the entire cost of an expense, your IRA doesn't also incur 100% of the income that's generated from that investment, but partnering with other investors, including yourself or other IRAs, is also a potential scenario that you can create up front to not have to worry about potential issues down the line. So work with your financial advisor. Make sure you know what annual contributions you're about to make, current partnerships laws and processes, and vet the financials and business plan for the investment. So make sure that you know, for example, if you're investing in a private fund, if there are going to be capital calls, if there's potential that you'll have capital calls down the line that you will need to be able to cover inside your retirement account. And with these, you can better determine if an investment is appropriate for you at this time. Okay, number four, not completing enough due diligence on companies, partners, or investments. Again, excuse me, with self-directed IRAs, if you're investing in non-traditional investments, if you're investing in stocks, bonds, and mutual funds, and you're working with a bank or brokerage firm, they're going to give you advice, right? These are publicly traded, and you can probably do a lot of research online. But with privately held investments, privately held companies, privately held funds, the onus is going to be on you to make sure that you do all your due diligence, right? So, unexpected costs or taxes. The most common consequences are higher costs than expected or paying taxes on investment that they thought was going to be tax-free. So that's called unrelated business income tax, and we'll come to that. If you don't have the funds to handle these costs, you may earn less than you expected or fail to uphold your funding responsibilities. Again, when we talked about capital costs. So you enter a rental real estate investment agreement. So not that your IRA owns a property, but your IRA is investing, let's say, a syndication or some kind of privately held fund, and that fund is turning around and investing in real estate. You didn't realize there would be what's called unrelated business income tax on your investment. So now all your financial projections are inflated. You're locked in for 3 years before the ability to withdraw any funds. So what is unrelated business income tax? When it comes to this here, I think we talk about it. Unrelated business income tax, how does it work? Money earned by a tax-exempt entity like your IRA that's not related to its tax-exempt purpose. So the IRS defined as this as income from a trade or business regularly carried on that is not substantially related to the charitable, educational, or other purpose that is the basis of the organization's exemption. To verify if your investments are deemed UPTI, please consult your tax advisor. For example, if your IRA owns a franchise, like some kind of franchise business, your IRA is running the business, right? So your IRA is receiving all the income from the business. Your IRA is paying all the expenses associated with the business. That would fall under unrelated business income tax. Your IRA would have to pay a tax that's called UBTI. The other side of this coin is called unrelated debt financed income tax, which comes into place with real estate. So let me explain to you how that works. If you use leverage, if your IRA borrows money to buy a property, and so let's say I'm going to use really basic numbers here that probably aren't largely applicable in the real world here, but let's say you find a property for $100,000, your IRA puts up $50,000, and your IRA borrows the other $50,000 to come up with the total $100,000. At the end of the year, your IRA earns $10,000 in rental income. The way the IRS looks at that is they say, okay, 50% of that $10,000 came from the IRA's money. The other 50% came from borrowed money. It came from outside the IRA. So that other 50%, that $5,000 that wasn't earned from the IRA's income, but rather from the borrowed money, is subject to UDFI or unrelated business taxable income. It's again, it's sort of the two sides of the same coin. It's taxed at trust rates. So the IRA will have to pay an expense because of the leverage. Now, in this example, let's say at the end of the following year, you've bought down the mortgage and it's now at 10% or at 40%. You bought down, 20% of it down from 50% of your IRA. So now your IRA, excuse me, owns 60% of the property. Or your IRA owns 100%, but 60% of it is by IRA money. And now 40% of it is from borrowed money because you paid down the note. Let's say you earn the same $10,000. Well, now this year, you're going to have to pay unrelated debt finance income tax or UBTI on 40%, right? Because the mortgage got paid down, right? Now, where this could potentially come into play, if you're investing in some kind of private fund or private equity, is that private equity? So is that company, let's say they're investing in a large apartment complex. Let's say in their example, you're going to be 1% of a $10 million project, right? But the fund, the syndicator, raised $5 million and borrowed the other $5 million. The same 50% could apply to your IRA. So the 1%, let's say one per, you get your 1% holding in that $10 million project, and you get a return on the same scenario, $10,000. But 50% of it from the syndicator, from the fund company, came from borrowed money. The same concept will apply to your IRA. It could be subject to unrelated business income tax, but that would be something that the fund, the private equity investment, would need to make you aware of so that you can file the form that needs to be filed is a 990T, and then the expense needs to be paid from the IRA. So the whole purpose of all this is just to be aware of when you're making an investment, and if you're investing in some kind of real estate type investment where you're investing in a real estate fund, syndication, something like that, and they're telling you we're going to generate 20% return, you want to find out if you potentially are going to be subject to UBTI because that 20% might turn out to be 18% or 16% or something like that, right? Once you add on the expense of the UBTI. I hope everybody understood that. And we're always going to encourage people to talk to like CPA, tax advisor, somebody like that to understand this better. And also before you do any types of investments. So review, as it says here, review investments with your financial or tax advisors to verify the implication of the agreement, what sort of taxes are tied to that investment. Your responsibility is to provide current database evidence, best practices, real-world examples, blah, blah, blah. That are vital for success in the industry being taught. So, again, the main point of this is to be aware that although an IRA is a tax sheltered entity, and so any investment that's made in the IRA is subject from federal income tax until you take a withdrawal, then depending upon the type of account, you might have to pay federal income tax, but it might be subject to unrelated debt financed income tax or unrelated business taxable income again. Sort of mean the same thing, but how you get to there are two different ways. Okay, paying more with poor Roth conversion or transfer strategies. So, Roth conversions are taking what is a pre-tax account, so like a traditional IRA or 401k, and converting it to a post-tax account, which is a Roth IRA. When you do the conversion, you're taking money that you deferred the tax on, where when you made the contribution, you lowered your taxable income. And you grew earnings and it's all been tax sheltered, and you're moving it into account that's post-tax contributions, which means if you take $10,000 from your traditional IRA and move it to a Roth IRA, you have to pay taxes now on that $10,000 conversion. Now, a Roth IRA grows tax-free as long as you meet the qualifications of you have a Roth for at least 5 years and you're over 59 and a half years old, but it does grow completely tax-free. So depending upon what your tax consequences are, it might make a lot of sense to do that, but you want to be aware of the tax consequences in the year that you make the conversion. So some people, I think, make conversions without really planning it. So you want to make sure when you're transferring from one IRA to another IRA. So when you're transferring from a brokerage firm to Entrust, you have to do like-to-like transfers. You have to go from a pre-tax account to a pre-tax account. So traditional IRA, SEP IRAs, simple IRAs or 401ks can transfer or roll over to a traditional IRA, SEP IRA, et cetera, et cetera. Roth goes to Roth. So if your goal is to go from a traditional IRA with, let's say, Fidelity to a Roth IRA with Entrust, you have to do it as two steps. You either have to convert it first with Fidelity in this example and then transfer it, or you have to transfer it from a traditional to a traditional and then convert it. Okay. You can't go from a traditional IRA with one custodian to a Roth IRA with a different custodian. So, with an example, you entered a higher tax bracket last year. Now you want to roll over 100K from a traditional to a Roth so you can invest into a new private equity deal, hoping to cash out down the road tax-free. Because you rolled over, all right, so what it says here, you rolled over all at once and have higher tax than ever. You are not prepared to handle the massive tax bill coming. So again, in this example, you can't roll over from a traditional to a Roth. You would transfer from a traditional to a traditional, then convert it to the Roth. Or do the conversion first and then do the transfer. But the fact remains is that that conversion, that 100K that gets converted, is now going to be filed. Whoever you do the conversion with is going to send a 1099-R to you and to the IRS reporting that $100,000 conversion, and now you have to pay taxes in whatever tax bracket you happen to fall in the year that you do that. So when considering Roth conversions, consider spreading out the conversion amounts. So one way that you could do that, let's say you have an investment that you want to make, you could do like, let's say $100,000, and let's say you could do a $50,000 conversion in December of one year, and then do a $50,000 in January of the next year. Like literally, run at the end of the year, at the beginning of the next year, you've done them essentially back to back, but now you've created a tax hit that's spread over two separate years. You want to, consider what tax bracket you're going to be in this year versus next year. A lot of times people do Roth conversions in years in which they've incurred some kind of personal investment loss, like where they sold an investment where it lost money. Now you can if you don't have anything to write that loss off against, doing a conversion now allows you to write that loss off against a, or write that loss off against that conversion and lower the tax hit. Again, I mean, talk to a CPA about this. I sort of feel like I'm understanding it better than I'm explaining it. If you are required to take a required minimum distribution from your traditional IRA in the year that you convert, you must do so before the conversion. Okay, so you have to calculate your tax hit based on the pre-conversion amount. Okay, not educating yourself on the latest tactics of scammers will use against you and how to stay safe. All right, so in 2024, $1 trillion in losses to fraud were reported from classics like pyramid scheme to more advanced tactics like spear phishing. Criminals are trying to scam investors like you every day. With the added complexities within self-directed IRAs, it's crucial that you understand the tactics being used against you so that you can stay safe. All right, all it takes is one mistake to break your nest egg. Don't risk it. So, examples. You get a regular email from a business partner with an urgent need to review an anticipated legal document from your company's lawyer. After opening the document, you realize there's an extra period in your partner's email. When you call them, they say they never send an email. You realize you clicked on a scammer's phishing link. Now everything is at risk to the scammer with access. So, when you get any emails, you want to check those email addresses very carefully to make sure that it is coming from a trusted source. So common tactics and best practices, business scams like Ponzi schemes, 419 schemes, telemarketing fraud. 419 schemes, I actually looked that up before I did this because I hadn't heard the term before. What that is when you get someone that says, hey, I'm inheriting a bunch of money, but I can't access it and I need like $10,000 and then I'll give you $100,000, right? But they're asking you to send them money first because they need it so that they can then access their inheritance, right? That's an example of a 419 scheme. Business email compromise. Again, we as a company, we get this all the time. We get, I get an email from the owner of our company and it has some kind of crazy email address that's clearly not him. Charity and disaster fraud, cryptocurrency, digital currency fraud is frequent, elder fraud. Scams around the holidays, ransomware, romance scams, spoofing and phishing, tech support scam. I mean, all these different things that are happening. I was just reading earlier today about like the latest craze, and I get these texts pretty often that look like the United States Postal Service says that they They send you, say we have this package and it came with the wrong zip code and please click this link. The United States Postal Service will never send you a link, right? So if you ever get anything like that that has a link, it's a scam. The United States Postal Service does not text out links. As a matter of fact, not going to text you anything unless you specifically signed up to be reached out for by text. So I seem to be getting these. I don't know what happened with my phone number, but I seem to be getting these every other day. All right. The last one, not opening a spousal IRA for a non-working partner. So you are allowed, if you are a single income household, you're allowed to make contributions to retirement accounts on behalf of a spouse, a non-working spouse. So as it says here, many have a spouse that is ineligible from opening their own IRA, but you can open a spousal IRA and contribute on their behalf. This can significantly increase your earning potential over time. So you open a spousal Roth IRA in 2014, maximize contributions for 10 years. In 10 years alone, you've invested at least an additional almost $60,000 based on contribution limits over the last 10 years. Can help cover unexpected costs on exit, and that doesn't even take into account the potential earnings that could be growing tax-free. In a Roth IRA, they grow tax-free. So when considering this strategy, verify a spouse's expected future eligibility to determine they're available. Remember to establish beneficiaries. We mentioned that. Don't forget to establish clear partnership terms before entering investments together, right? So if you're going to partner with other investors, make sure your terms with those partners are clear. So some positive management habits. Starts with educating yourself. IRA management requires your attention to detail, commitment to understanding what's needed for you to maximize opportunities and mitigate risks. Before action comes education, so keep learning. We have a lot of educational material on our website. We have these webinars. Again, with a self-directed IRA, though, that's all on you, right? Your custodian isn't going to be involved in helping you due diligence on an investment, help you do due diligence on an investment that you want to make. So, correcting bad habits and building good ones don't happen overnight. You need to outline your annual management calendar with plans to handle all conceivable outcomes and misfortunes. No plan is good without consistent execution. So respect the plan process involved once you fully understand what your strategy demands. So momentum is powerful. Start building it now. These are things you could probably read in all kinds of self-help books and all that. But and then don't be afraid to ask for help, right? Don't hesitate to have other people who are experts in their field to advise you and give you advice, including advisors, tax specialists, etc. If you're ever wronged or duped, it's always better to report it instead of being too embarrassed and staying silent. So if you do ever are the subject of a scam, I encourage you to reach out to the authorities. And as the third paragraph says, always ask for help when you don't understand something or get a gut feeling that something is not right. Okay, so we're going to go ahead and wrap this up and then I'll be able to answer questions. If you do want to open a self-directed IRA with Entrust, it's very easy. You can open an Entrust account. You go to our website. You'll see a tab up at the top says open an account. Click on it, enter in an email address. You get sent a link. Click on the link, create a password, open an account. Takes 10, maybe 15 minutes to get an account established. Then you fund your account. You transfer rollover money from your existing custodian to your account with us, or you can make an annual contribution. Most people fund it by doing transfers or rollovers from a different account, from an account with a different custodian. And then you instruct Entrust to make whatever investment it is that you want to make. So that investment is held in the name of your IRA. The name of your IRA with us is the Entrust Group. FBO stands for For Benefit of the Entrust Group, FBO, your name, IRA number, and then your account number with us. So if you're buying a rental property, the name on the contract, on the closing documents, and ultimately title on that would be the Entrust Group, FBO, your name and account number. Okay. What's next? We will send out a link for this webinar. So for everybody who registered, and we get a lot of people who register and then don't necessarily show up, and I think they do that so that they can get emailed the link. We send that out. You will get a replay of this. The link will be sent to you in an email. And then for January's webinar, We go over top dates, deadlines, and tax tips for the coming year, which I think is a pretty standard January webinar for us. If you need more information on self-directed IRAs, visit our website. We have the Learning Center in particular, it has a lot of information, and we have a presence on social media, so you're welcome to follow us. Okay, so I'm going to get to the Q&A now, and this is my contact information. I'm going to leave it up on the screen here. All right, let me get to the Q&A section. Okay. First one, if an investment I hold inside an IRA LLC, which is in turn held within my self-directed IRA at Entrust, goes out of business, what's the first step I should take with Entrust to correctly zero out that asset? So, if you mean that your investment loses money, right? Essentially, if your investment that you made doesn't have any more money, because that would be the way the LLC would go out of business, right? Like, if you have investments in there that are generating a return, because it's the IRA, excuse me, because it's the IRA that owns the investment, that return has to get paid back to the IRA. You can't just simply take all the money out of the LLC yourself. It has to go back to the IRA. Once you want to close out your LLC, you want to liquidate it, we have a form. In this case, if you just lost the money, if the investments just went bad and your LLC no longer has value, we have a fair market valuation process where you can instruct us that your asset has lost its value or changed value at all. It's not just if it goes to zero, but if it changes at all. The easiest way to do that is to log into your account. There's a tab at the top says activity. And then if you click on activity, there is an select activity type. And you scroll down, and one of the activities says fair market valuation. You click on that, and then there's another button that says update FMV, and then you can go there, and then you can put zero. Or we have a manual form. We have a PDF of our fair market valuation form, which you can find on our website under forms. If you go to theentrustgroup.com, up towards the top, and right, like next to the login button, it says forms. If you click on forms and you scroll down, you'll be able to see a fair market valuation. It's a PDF. You can fill it out and then either have a third party sign it or attach supporting documentation. So if you have an asset that lost value, if you have some kind of documentation to support that, you need to attach that. Okay, I'm 70 and want to convert some of my gold self-directed IRA in kind to a Roth IRA. Aside from paying generated income tax and keeping my total income in my current bracket, is it possible someone to avoid the collectibles tax, and when might it be incurred? I've never heard of a collectibles tax. Gold is not a collectible. So if you're holding gold inside your self-directed IRA, it's not a collectible. So I don't think it would be subject to a collectibles tax. Again, I've never heard of collectibles tax. An IRA is not allowed to invest in collectibles. If you want to convert some of your gold to a Roth IRA, then you just have to fill out our conversion form. Well, first of all, you have to open a Roth IRA if you don't already have one, and then you have with us, and then you fill out our conversion instructions. And then what we'll do is we will contact the depository that's holding your gold and have them open an account in the name of your Roth IRA. And then internally, we will convert it to the Roth IRA. But the name of the account that's holding the gold is going to change, right? Because right now it's the Entrust Group FBO, your name and account number one. And the new owner of the gold is going to be the Entrust Group FBO, your name and account number two. So an account has to be established at the depository under that new name of the second IRA. And then internally, they'll move the gold over to that different account. We'll do it internally on our paperwork. We'll send you a 1099. But again, I don't know what a collectibles tax is. I'm sorry, but I don't think your gold would be subject to it because gold's not a collectible. How can we check who our current beneficiary is? I mean, if you log into your account and go to your information, you should be able to access who your beneficiary is and change it in there as well. If you can't find it, then call somebody in our office, call our customer service team, and they'll help walk you through how to get to it. Can a trust be a primary or can you said secondary beneficiary? The term we use is contingent beneficiary. Yes, a lot of people have named a trust, like a family trust, as a beneficiary of their account. That you can certainly do that. If you get a non-recourse loan for a property purchased in your IRA, but it has bad boy carve-out provisions, is that disqualified loan under IRS ERISA rules? Yes, I believe it is. The loan by definition has to be non-recourse, and if you have pr bad boy provisions in there, I think by definition that means that the loan is no longer a non-recourse loan. Because the only recourse in a non-recourse loan that the lender can is they can take the property, right? And so if you have bad boy carve-outs, then I think that's creating additional recourse, essentially. So my answer to that is yes, I believe that that is the case, that that would not be considered a non-recourse loan. Can I make a loan for my self-directed Roth IRA to my two-member LLC for purpose of purchasing real estate? No, when you say two-member LLC, if one of the two members or either of the two members is a disqualified person to your Roth IRA, then the answer to that is no. Now, when you say my two-member LLC, I'm assuming you as the are one of the two members, which means you are a disqualified person to your IRA, and your IRA can't lend to a disqualified person. And so you're essentially asking, can your Roth IRA lend to you? Right? And the answer to that is no. You now, if the two members are a sibling and a cousin or something like that, and again, when you say my two member, I'm assuming that you're one of the members. But if the two members are a non-disqualified person to your IRA, the answer is yes, they can lend to that. But it can't lend to an LLC that's owned by you because you're a disqualified person to your IRA. Can a Roth IRA be used to buy property for personal use? No. That's just flat out no. Not only a Roth IRA, no IRA, no retirement account can buy property for personal use. A Roth IRA, a traditional IRA, a 401k, a health savings account. It has to be for investment purposes only. Can you please elaborate on the specifics of investing in a company owned by a disqualified person? If the self-directed IRA investor becomes a senior employee and takes a salary, are they disqualified? And what is the max amount of equity that an individual can have before they become disqualified? I've heard it has to be less than 50%. Would be like to confirm. Okay. So I'm going to add a qualifier before I answer this question, which is that the way it's written in the code leaves some room for interpretation. There's some ambiguity associated with it, but I can tell you largely how we interpret it. And before you were to make any kind of investment like this, we encourage you to have like a tax advisor or CPA or somebody with letters after their name read the code for themselves and give you their thoughts. The way it appears to read is that an IRA can invest in a company as long as you own less than 50%, as long as you're a passive investor in the company. What I mean by that is you have no involvement, you or any other disqualified person have no involvement in running the company, right? You have no involvement as a manager or any involvement in working for that company, right? You're just investing in a company the same way as if you buy stock in Apple, right? Through you're buying a percentage of Apple. Now it's a tiny percentage because there's so much stock, but the concept remains the same, is that when you're buying stock in Apple, you're buying stock in a company that you're just unless you work for Apple, but again, the percentage is going to be so small that it's fine. So the 50% rule is if you're strictly a passive investor. And so it says, can you please elaborate on a specific investment company owned by a disqualified person? So if you want to use your IRA to invest in a company and that company is owned at all by a disqualified person, now you have to look in what's the role that that person has in the company and how much ownership does that person have? If the person has a role in the company, then that drops down to 10%. The ownership has to be less than 10%. So your IRA can invest in a company that a disqualified person, as you say in here, becomes a senior employee and takes a salary. The senior employee has 10% more ownership, 10% or more ownership in the company, your IRA can't invest. If you're the senior employee has less than 10% ownership, then you can. Now, again, that's how we read the code. I would encourage you to, before making an investment in a company where a disqualified person is a senior employee and has ownership in the company, you have someone, some tax advisor, somebody like that, take a look at it and give their opinion as well. The last slide mentioned an early withdrawal. Are those allowed from self-directed IRAs? The rules with a self-directed IRA, from a contribution rules, distribution rules, transfer rules, like none of those are different, right? A traditional IRA or a Roth IRA, a self-directed traditional IRA, and a self-directed Roth IRA, and a self-directed 401k, the tax and distribution and contribution rules are no different than a non-self-directed traditional IRA, Roth IRA, SEP IRA, 401k, et cetera, et cetera. So you're allowed to take early withdrawals from an IRA, right? Whether it's self-directed or not, but it's subject to a penalty, right? There's a 10% penalty if you're under age 59 and a half. Do I have that age right? All right, so here's another question. If my IRA is invested in stocks, bonds, funds, do I have to liquidate the amount, say 100K, to cash in order to do a self-direct investment? Yes. You're opening an IRA with us, right? So you're not, like, we're not acting as custodian on behalf of your Vanguard IRA, right? You're actually opening an IRA and then transferring cash from your Vanguard IRA to your Entrust IRA and then instructing us to make that investment. And yes, so the answer to that is yes. You would have to liquidate the $100,000, transfer it to your Entrust IRA, and then instruct us to invest it. Isn't it true that the five-year Roth conversion limitation applies only to gains in the Roth account and not principal transferred from the Roth account? You're probably right. Honestly, I'm not sure, but that sounds right. I mean, certainly it's only the gains that are subject to, like, potential. Like if you try and take it out and when you haven't had a Roth for at least 5 years, you're under 59 and a half, then you have to pay taxes, et cetera, et cetera. That's only on the gains, not on the original contribution. So I'm guessing you're probably right. I have to admit, like some of these rules, it's tough to stay on top of, and I'm not a CPA, but that does sound like that's probably right. Just to confirm, we can open a Roth IRA for a non-working spouse. That is correct. Not only open, but contribute to, right? Like, that was the whole point of this, is to make contributions, right? Like, anybody can open a Roth IRA, right? Like, but if you want to contribute to it, you have to. Now, I think the rules also say that you have to be filing jointly, right? Like, talk to a CPA about this, about your ability to make contributions to a non for a non-working spouse, but how you file your taxes plays a part in that. Could a self-directed IRA holder expect that they would receive some type of warning about unrelated business income tax from a fund manager that is used to having investors using a self-directed IRA? I would like to say yes, that you could expect that, but I don't know that all, private fund managers, syndicators, and things like that are aware of whether their investment is, if they're bringing in IRA investors, if they're potentially exposing those investments to self-directed or to unrelated business income tax. So, it depends. I again, before you make any investment, our suggestion is have the conversation with the people running the fund that you're thinking about investing in terms of, are they aware of unrelated business income tax, and could your IRA be subject to unrelated business income tax? And if the answer to that is we don't know, we've never heard of it, we don't know what you're talking about, then, bear that in mind and maybe talk to a tax advisor or CPA before you make the investment. If you consult an advisor, CPA, tax expert, attorney, et cetera, for your self-directed IRAs, must fees for those services be paid with self-directed IRA funds? No. You said, I presume yes, but please confirm or correct me. Thanks. No. Your IRA has to pay expenses that come with the asset that's held inside the IRA. So, for example, if you own real estate, then property taxes, insurance, maintenance, things like that have to be paid from the IRA. If you invest in a fund and the fund is investing in a apartment complex, and that apartment complex is incurring fees that they now need to come back and say, we need more money from all of our investors. We need to raise another $1 million. And so you own 1%, you got to give us another $10,000. That has to come from the IRA, right? But before you make the investment, if you have to, travel to see it, or if you have, again, if you want to talk to an advisor or something like that, and you haven't even made the investment, those are personal expenses. Those are not IRA. Those are not expenses that come from the asset itself. So no, those wouldn't be paid from the IRA. If I'm buying a rental property, am I allowed to represent myself as a real estate broker and manage the property? All right. So I feel like I see the name. You and I have had a lot of conversations. I feel like we may have talked about this. Here's another one that, again, you might get differing opinions depending upon who you talk to. Here's what I can tell you. I would not take a commission, right? So there's wording in the section of the code that talks about providing services to the plan, right? And again, it's kind of ambiguous in terms of what exactly does that mean, providing services to the plan. So if you are a real estate broker, or you're a property manager and your IRA is buying rental property, can you provide, do you have to outsource this, or can you do it yourself? Here's the one thing I would tell you: don't pay yourself, right? So don't take a commission to be the broker. Don't take a return to manage the property, because essentially what you're doing is you're having your IRA pay you without it being listed as a distribution. And that would be considered prohibited. Now, the actual act itself of being a broker or being a property manager on a property that's owned by your IRA, could you do that? There's nothing in the code that says you can't. But I would be very careful about that, particularly it's one thing if you got a single property and you're managing the property yourself, but you're not a property manager by trade. Right? That's not what you do for a living, but you have a single property, and managing it basically means once a year or every couple of years showing the property, posting it on Craigslist or whatever, and showing it to people, and hiring contractors to do work, et cetera, et cetera. I would say that that's probably not, you're probably not really risking anything. But if your business, if you're a property manager by trade, and you're managing a whole bunch of properties, you're now adding this and doing it as it's interestingly enough, that's more likely to be considered prohibited than if you're not a property manager and you're managing your property. But again, there's nothing in the code that says you can't be the real estate agent on a transaction involving your IRA, or that you can't manage a property that's owned by your IRA. There's nothing that you will find that says you can't do that. But I would be really careful about that if that's what you do. If you're a property manager or you're a real estate agent, you want to do it yourself. Like I could say personally, based on I tend to lean kind of with this stuff a little bit conservatively, I wouldn't do it personally. But you might have a conversation with someone else, with some like a CPA who might read it, or even somebody else, like another self-directed IRA company. They'd be like, yeah, like no problem. But again, I would very, very much recommend that you don't take any kind of commission. Don't pay yourself. Okay. Does InTrust provide any guidance regarding filing requirements for the Corporate Transparency Act? No, I wouldn't say we do. That would be something that, if that's required, you would be responsible for knowing that and doing it yourself. But I can honestly say I don't know what that is. I know profits in the traditional IRA are deferred and we pay tax on them when funds are withdrawn. Correct. Is there any way to recognize a loss incurred in IRA, or you just lose out? You just lose out. Like you either grow your retirement account or you don't, right? You invest in, same thing with stocks. You invest in a stock. People who invested in I'm trying to remember the name of the company. Enron. People invested in Enron like with their retirement accounts, and then it turned out to be like one large giant scam. They just lost their money, right? Like their IRA lost their money. They don't get to deduct that on their taxes. I hold real estate in my interest IRA that's pretty much worthless. If I held it outside my IRA, I would get a tax loss carry forward to use on my taxes. Is there anything comparable for assets held inside an IRA? Unfortunately, not. There isn't. Are there any restrictions on C corps and IRAs can invest in? Can the C corp be operated by a prohibited person? So I kind of answered this before. Your IRA can invest in a C corp, right? So the only thing an IRA can't invest in are S corps. They can invest in LLCs, limited partnerships. C corps can't invest in an S corp. So an IRA can invest in a C corp, but if the C corp is owned by, so you said, can the C corp be operated by a prohibited person? It's not so much operated, although that plays a part. It's the ownership. Does the prohibited person own the C corp? If the answer to that is yes, then an IRA can't be an investor, but you can't potentially through a 401k under the ROB structure, following the rollover for business startup structure. Okay, next question. Can one open a Roth IRA if they're not employed? Sure, you can open a Roth IRA if you're not employed, but if you want to make contributions to it, you have to have taxable income. So it's not a matter of opening it. The question is can you make contributions? Not if you're not generating taxable income. And that's not just Roth IRAs, that's any IRA. You can't make contributions to an IRA unless you're generating taxable income. I'm getting ready to sell property in my IRA held by InTrust to reinvest it. Is it possible for the new investment, the land, to be owned by me personally and the condo to be built is owned by the IRA? No, that's prohibited. If you want to build on land through the IRA has to own the land, or the land has to be owned by a non-disqualified third party. Since you're a disqualified person to your IRA can't build on land that you own personally. If the IRA asset is a C corp and the C corp has financing, if the IRA asset is a C corp and the C corp have financing without giving rise to unrelated business income tax. It's a good question. I don't think so. I don't think that that's an example of something that would be subject to unrelated business income tax. But honestly, like, I don't know all the ins and outs of like everything associated with that, right? Like, I mean, again, this is part of the whole self-directed thing. These are the kind of things that you need to know, right? And so if this is something that you want to know, like you would need to talk to a CPA or tax advisor about something like that. But my inclination is to say, no, I don't think so. But honestly, I don't really know for sure on that one. Is a maintenance employee of a company owned by my wife a disqualified person? Yes, your wife is a disqualified person to your IRA. So wait, is a maintenance employee of a company owned by my wife a disqualified person? He used to be an independent contractor, but got changed to an employee because of California law change. Well, no, the employee is not a disqualified person. Your wife is a disqualified person. Because your employee works for your wife's company doesn't make that employee a disqualified person. You didn't sort of talk about what kind of transaction you want your IRA to do with that employee, but no. If you're saying, would that employee be able to invest in your wife's company because he worked, like it comes down to ownership. If it's just an employee with no ownership in the company, then that employee is not a disqualified person to your wife's IRA. If the asset is partly financed, that is real estate, can the IRA take depreciation to reduce the U? No. An IRA doesn't file taxes. So how would an IRA, I mean, yes, okay. So it files a 990T, but there isn't any write-offs against it. The asset is partly financed real estate. Can the IRA take depreciation to reduce the unrelated business income tax to zero? No, it can't. If the financing is paid off before the asset is sold, would any recapture, again, it's just not applicable. Did my question about losses on real estate held in an IRA go through? I don't remember if I answered your question or not. If I'm at retirement age and make a Roth conversion, must I wait 5 years before penalty-free distributions? Yes. You have to have a Roth for at least 5 years. So if you're converting to a Roth and it's the first Roth you've ever had, then yeah, it doesn't matter. You have to be both over 59 and a half and have had a Roth for at least 5 years. So it's both of those things. So if this is your first ever Roth, yes, you're going to have to wait 5 years before it can be not just penalty free, tax free. If I take a distribution from one IRA and wish to put it back, do I have to put it back into the same account, or can I put it into another account of the same type and still reduce the tax demands, presuming I do this within 60 days? Yeah, you're talking about a rollover. Yes, you can put it in a different account. You can roll it over. But note that you're only allowed to do IRA to IRA rollovers once a year, once every 365 days. So if you take it out of a one IRA and you roll it into another IRA with a different, or to an IRA with a different custodian, and you do it within 60 days, that's okay. Just you're going to have to wait another 365 days before you can do it again. If you go roll over from a 401k to an IRA, there's no limitations. You can do as many of those as you want. If you're required to pay required minimum distribution, but the IRA is invested in real estate and non-liquid, can you pay the RMD amount personally and show it as a contribution to the IRA for that year? No. I would say, that's actually a good question. So, like, if you have to pay like $5,000, can you just pay it and call it a contribution? No, I mean, for us, like, we have to receive the contribution, right? Like, we as a you have to re like we have to report your contribution. We as custodian have to report the contribution to the IRS, right? Like, that goes on a form 5498. Like, there's a form that we file every year for all accounts, not just us, all retirement account custodians, that reports your rollovers. It reports the fair market value of your account. It reports contributions. And we have to be able to report the contribution. And we need you to actually contribute the money, right? Like, we need you to make the contribution. Like, you can't just say, hey, I just sent this to the IRS and, can you just report this as a contribution for me? Unfortunately, we can't do that. So my answer to your question would be no. You'd have to make the contribution. I mean, it seems silly because what you're doing is you're making the contribution and then withdrawing it, right, to meet your RMD. I get that. But it needs a proper paper trail, right? From a custodial standpoint, like, we need a proper paper trail for audit trail purposes. Can I invest in an LLC that is majority owned by my husband and his managing member? No, that's a prohibited transaction. Does this make sense as a structure? Instead of does a real estate development personally and paying a top marginal rate of 37%, have a Roth IRA form a C Corp with the C Corp using borrowed funds to do the development so that the C Corp pays 20.1% tax with IRA owner paying either 10% or zero on distributions? Talk to a CPA. I don't have an, I can't answer that. I would recommend you talk to a tax advisor. What's the best way to open a self-directed Roth IRA for one's grandchildren? Okay, just you can open an account. So we have a way for guardians to open an account on behalf of their children, or in this case, grandchildren, where you fill out the account application in the kid in the child's name, and then we have a separate form where it lists the guardian's information. Then we open the account on behalf of that child. Here's the thing, though. In order for you to make contributions to that account, the child has to be generating earned income. Right. Again, to make contributions to a retirement account, the account holder has to be generating earned income. So opening the account isn't difficult. Question is there a way that you're generating and reporting income for that child to enable them to then make contributions, or for you to make contributions to that kid's account on their behalf? Further to the question about the maintenance employee perform certain maintenance services for property owned by my IRA and my wife's company was paid, and then the employee was paid. Okay, you didn't continue with the question that I see here. Further to the question about the maintenance, okay, so the maintenance employee performed certain maintenance services for property owned by my IRA, and my wife's company was paid. Oh, I see. And then the employee was paid. I got you now. So, yeah, I mean, the fact that it's your wife's company that's in a sense, in essence, doing the work, then that would be prohibited. Now, if you hired that maintenance employee, if you hired them, you said, look, come do the work. I'm going to pay you directly from my IRA. That's fine. But the fact that your IRA is paying your wife's company first, that's a prohibited transaction. Okay. So the employee itself isn't a disqualified person as long as your IRA is paying them directly. But as soon as you pay your wife's company, you've created a prohibited transaction. If the contact person for an asset no longer is available, the contact for an no longer available, we have no idea if it went out of business or what. How long should we wait before showing this as a loss on the FMV form? I mean, that's up to you. You know, I mean, if you're, it's your call on that. Like, there isn't, I can't give you a rule of thumb or say you should wait a certain amount of time. Like, it really is up to, you know, hopefully you're talking to, you've reached out to, you know, maybe the Securities and Exchange Commission, or you're working with any kind of law enforcement to, you know, try and find out a solution to this. But, you know, here's the thing. If you're subject to required minimum distribution, then you might want to do that sooner rather than later, because that value of that asset is impacting what you are required to take as a required minimum distribution. So, but I mean, if you're not subject to RMD, I mean, it's up to you, like how quickly you feel like. I mean, also bear in mind we do charge a fee, right? Like, it's not necessarily a lot of money, but we do, or at least in interest case, you know, we have a record keeping fee that we charge for any assets that we hold. So, you know, if you're paying us a fee and you feel pretty confident that the asset no longer has any value to it, then, you know, removing it takes away our fee as well. So sorry that that happened. And I don't necessarily have a better answer to you, but I don't have a rule of thumb to give you. It's just a matter of you figuring, you know, what you guys, when you guys decide you've given up on it. I believe the answer to Marlene's question conflicts with an earlier answer. My understanding is that the principal transferred from the traditional IRA to establish the Roth has already been taxed and therefore can be withdrawn without penalty or tax. So when you made a contribution to a tradit, no, principal transferred from a traditional, okay. So the way conversions work with a Roth IRA is if you have, for your retirement account, if you have a Roth IRA and you have, if you have, like, let's say 50% of it is contribution and 50% of it, or principal in the term you're using, and 50% is earnings, and then you take a withdrawal. You can't tell the IRS, well, I'm only taking out my principal. I'm not taking out any of the earnings. If it's 50-50, then you have to pay 50% tax on the earnings part of it. Now, when it comes to conversions, I don't think principal applies, right? Because you're converting from a pre-tax account. You're not making a contribution. You're just converting from a pre-tax account. You pay taxes on the full amount. Let me think about this. So you pay taxes on the full amount. Then whatever you take out, so you're saying prior to 5 years, if you take out, so if you convert $10,000 and then you decide that you want to take out that $10,000 prior to 59 and a half or prior to having it for 5 years, you shouldn't have to pay taxes or a penalty because you've already paid taxes on it. You might be right about that. Because you only pay taxes on the earnings, right? If you do it prior to 59 and a half. So you might actually, now that you say that, you might be right about that. But again, I'm not a CPA. And so you'd want to talk to a tax advisor or a CPA. All I can tell you is when you take a withdrawal from your when you take a withdrawal from your account, we file a Form 1099, right? Like, we report that. Now, what impact that has on your taxes is kind of, you know, for you and your tax advisor to figure out. But I mean, you might be right about that. The principal rolled over, converted from the traditional IRA to Stabilized Roth, has already been taxed and therefore can be withdrawn without penalty or tax. You could be right about that. That makes sense. All right, somebody wrote hi, Mr. Neville, and then didn't ask a question. So I'm giving it. All right, here we go. I must jump out from the meeting, but definitely will show you an email regarding. Okay. So that's it. That was the last question. I appreciate everybody joining us, and make sure you join us again in January for the webinar on important dates and things to know for 2025. Thanks again. Have a good one.